Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
Named to Talkers Magazine's Heavy 100 for the second year in a row.
We tell you over and over again that you're wonderful, and you just don't get it. What's wrong with you?
Congratulations, Jim Blasingame, our small business advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Mr. Wonderful here. Good to be with you as always, and it's my pleasure to be part of your day, and I know it's like a dream come true for you to be part of ours, as it is a dream come true to have Rich Galen on the show. Rich is an old friend of ours, a longtime member of our Brain Trust. He is, in the interest of full disclosure, of the Republican persuasion. He's the author of the outstanding thrice-weekly cyber column, Mullings.com. He, as I say, he's our good friend. Rich, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, my friend. Nice to be here.
It's good to have you back. You know what today is, right? Today's Columbus Day.
Columbus Day. Somebody told me it was a day off, but as I was sitting in makeup this morning at 5:45 at Fox, I forgot it was a day off.
Yeah, many of you saw Rich on Fox earlier, very much earlier today. That wasn't a backdrop of the Capitol in his rumpus room. He really was downtown. Rich, but the city's basically shut down today, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the city shut down because the Congress left on Saturday for the election, so they're gone, and so traffic diminishes dramatically when the Congress is out of session. I have a friend who said one day, he called me one day, he said, well, now we know who causes the traffic jams. I said, who? It happened to be like right after Rosh Hashanah. He said, well, on Rosh Hashanah there was no traffic, so we know who causes the traffic. But when the Congress is out, you know, there's, I don't know, what, 13, 15,000 employees of the Congress. So, and when they're in, they all go to work at approximately the same time. When the Congress is out of session, and as I said, they quit on Saturday for the, they'll come back for a lame duck session to finish up the appropriations bills.
Right.
But then people kind of drift into work at, you know, random times, so the traffic is much easier. But it's pretty easy at 5:45 in the morning anyway.
Exactly. Well, and I always feel safer when the Congress has disbanded and gone out to the hinterland. And
that's right. It's what Will Rogers said. America never sleeps so soundly as when the Congress is in recess.
On this day in 1886, Rich,
I was born.
Thomas Edison was 19.
Filed
for his very first patent, and it was the electric machine to count votes for U.S. Congress.
Really?
But it wasn't purchased.
Well,
apparently, now that what I just said is true. This part is the punchline. Apparently, the one that they bought had something called a Chad involved.
Yeah, it's been named Chad.
I'm sorry, I couldn't resist that.
I would be perfectly. I, as you know, been doing this for my whole life. I ran for office twice. The first time I ran, I lost by 2 votes, 902 to 900. The second time, I won. But you know, I would be perfectly happy to go back to paper ballots. I mean, the only reason I think that we have gotten ourselves twisted around this pole of electronic gizmology is A, because it's available, and B, because the news media demands to know who won. You know, well, I mean, they want to know who won 5 hours before the polls even close.
Sometimes they claim to know before anybody votes.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I mean, I would be perfectly happy to go back to paper ballots and, you know, have, like we used to do in the olden days, and have people, you know, as long as you had a number two pencil, then you could vote, and it was pretty easy.
Absolutely. And a lot of people still do that. I mean, there are a lot of precincts out there that still do it that way.
Not that many, but people say, well, you can't, you know, there was always fraud when, you know, the bad guys would put ballots in their pocket and stuff. But, you know, I'm not so sure you can do that as easily anymore, because there's not very many counties that are so overwhelmingly controlled by one party or another. You know, I was in France and Italy over the last 2 weeks on a lecture tour for the State Department, a program they called the Citizen Diplomat Program, and I laughingly wrote in Mullings.
Which one were you, the citizen or the diplomat?
Yeah, I was the citizen, but that's exactly the point. I have this, in Mullings, I occasionally have a thing, a Greek chorus kind of a thing, where I say, Dear Mr. Mullings, how can you, and in this one I said, Dear Mr. Mullings, how can you, how can there be a program with your name and the word diplomat, you know, involved in the same thing? How can you be involved in that? And I signed it, the Office of Kofi Annan. which obviously was a joke.
Right.
But I got down to the embassy in Rome, and the public affairs officer said, "Boy, you're pretty flip." I said, "Yeah, well, I am pretty flip." He said, "I mean, that kind of an answer," because the answer was, "Is this a great country or what?"
Yeah.
And he said, "But I mean, you, the way you answered that the letter from Kofi Annan's office," I said, "I made that up." State Department guys don't have that good a sense of humor.
Apparently so. Rich, we're coming up on a break, three things have happened since we talked last, because we haven't talked to you since any of the debates were on,
right.
And we've had two presidential candidate debates, and we've had one vice presidential candidate debate, and so when we come back after these messages, I want you to sort of give us a quick tour of the first two,
okay.
And we're going to spend a little more time on the last one, because that's the only one that hasn't been rung completely out, although it's very close. We're going to finish that job today, and we're going to do that right after these messages. It's 20 till. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Rich Galen is our guest.
To my love, took it down.
We're back at 43 after 17 till. Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. Rich Galen is our guest. And Rich, I want to talk about this is the first time you and I've been able to talk since the debates. The very first one, I don't want to spend a lot of time on that one because that was been rung out pretty well. But
yeah.
The very first one, am I the only person in the world who was struck by the fact that Kerry never looked into the camera?
Yeah, well, it was not only did he not look into the camera, but he was very well schooled in not presenting an opportunity for the cutaway shots, the reaction shots.
I saw him he did a good acting job, and that was good for him. That was smart for him. But the same people, do you think they intentionally told him not to look into the camera?
No, I don't.
Only look at Jim Lehrer.
Yeah, I think it was part of the because he did look in the camera during the second debate when he said I'm going to look at the American people and tell you this. I think it was a function of he probably does everybody does better. I mean, except for me because I don't have any social skills, but everybody does better when they're talking to an actual person. I mean, as you know, because you've done this a lot too, when you do these TV shows, there's nobody in the room with you. You're just looking at a
right.
camera. You're not talking to anybody. So it takes some practice to get used to that, and these guys really do best when they can play off the feedback, even the vibes that they're getting from a live person. So I suspect they schooled him to do that just so that he could keep his energy level up, because
it was
always a danger with it.
It seemed to me, though, that it would that while I was watching it, I even dashed off an email to you and I said, "Why isn't he looking into the camera?" It seemed to me that the American people, the you know where the big audience was, they would want to see him looking at them now. George Bush did look into the camera. He also smirked or scowled or whatever they said that he did into the camera. And you know, I guess I always thought I was watching a different ball game than what the pundits were saying afterwards.
Well, I was in Italy, so it was on at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is both too early and too late. It's too late to stay up and too early to get up for. So the embassy in Rome reran it at 10:30 in the morning Rome time and invited about 30 journalists to sit with me and watch it so we could talk about it. And so by that time, I'd read all the coverage, and I thought, as I wrote in the column, I was going to have to dive under the table and hold my hands over my ears and sing the la-la-la song. But when it was over, the journalists had read the same coverage, and we all agreed that, you know, Kerry was the better debater, but Bush didn't do badly
well,
at all.
I noticed that President Bush did act a little bit irritated. He did act as if he was... You know, he was a little bit. It was like the little boy who had the answer. Teacher, please let me in.
Yeah,
you know,
He did that a couple.
Yeah, Horseshack. That's a good one. He did that a couple of times. That was unfortunate. But what about the town hall meeting? What did you think about the town hall? Was that a good venue for the president, or was it better for Kerry?
No, I thought they both did well in that one. But the president did better because he did as well as Kerry. So because he clearly was not as polished as Kerry in the first one. But it's interesting that the campaign, the Bush campaign, was really opposed to the town hall concept because they were afraid that it would get loaded up with anti-Bush people. But that's what the president does very well. Unlike his dad, President George W. Bush really likes campaigning. I mean, he likes getting out there. He likes to fight. He likes the competition of it. His father, like many people of his generation, always felt that politics was the part you had to get through to get to the really good stuff, which is governing and policy. But Bush likes them both, and so he did. I know his campaign folks were very pleasantly surprised with the way that he handled the questions and the way that he handled the debate.
Well, now, tell us how the polls have turned out since that last debate.
Well, you know, it's pretty interesting. I just studied this over the weekend because I thought maybe this was going to come up this morning on Fox. But, you know, the Kerry surge following the first debate, to the extent that there was a surge, still did not get him to where he was at his high point, which was right after his convention last July. I mean, that was the high point of the Kerry campaign vis-a-vis Bush. And even this latest, the run-up after that first debate, didn't get him above Bush in almost any poll. The way you deal with these polls is like the way you used to deal with Olympic figure skating. First, you throw out the East German score because you know they're lying. Then you throw out the high and the low, and then whatever's left is probably where it is. So I'm looking at the tracking polls from overnight. Zogby is the only one that has Kerry ahead, and that's plus one, so that's essentially even. Time magazine's got Bush plus one, so that's essentially even. The other three, ABC, Washington Post, the George Washington University poll, and the Marist poll, all have Bush ahead plus three to plus five, which I think most people here think is approximately correct. Bush is slightly ahead.
Are these of likely voters or registered voters?
No, these are all likely. But at this point, everybody's only polling is only reporting likely voters.
Right. Tell us what the difference is, in case it's not intuitive.
Well, a registered voter is somebody who is registered to vote, but through a variety of different filters, and each polling firm uses different filters. Some use age plus education plus if you voted in the last election. Some use some other matrix. But if you are likely to go and vote, then we care about you.
Yeah.
If you're only registered, we don't care anymore.
That's right. When we come back, I'm going to ask Rich about the 359 Americans who are still undecided. What do you think they're going to do after these messages? It's Tintel. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Rich Galen is our guest. His website is mullings.com.
What will you do when you get called in? Nobody's waiting.
We're back. 7 till. I'm Jim Lassingame, small business advocate, and we're visiting with our good friend Rich Galen, the author and the publisher and the genius behind Mullings.com, the thrice weekly cyber column. Your mother gave me that copy, Rich.
Yeah, but I'm also the sales manager and the
janitor,
the web page architect. As I've said before, I am the basic building block of the American economy. I'm like the charmed quark.
That's right.
I am a single person business.
And if you go to Mullings.com, you can subscribe to his thrice weekly cyber column. It is of the Republican. He spins to the right, as he says, but other folks like it too.
Well,
because they want to make sure they know what he's up to. That's one of the reasons the Democrats check on him.
Yeah, this morning I wrote about a guy named Mark Halperin, who's the ABC News political director, in this memo that he wrote. I'm getting hate mail from my own readers this morning.
Right. Well, but of course that's into the weeds for the average person out there a little bit. But what do you think about how the media has covered the election so far?
Well, I think it has been. I have never seen a time when the media, as we call it, the popular press, has been so one-sided in its coverage. I mean, the point I made this morning was that there's been no coverage of this guy George Soros, S-O-R-O-S,
right,
who has already spent somewhere in the area of $15 million and says he will spend up to $25 million of his own money on these 527 campaigns.
He's an international billionaire, ladies and gentlemen.
Billionaire. And nobody has come up with in the domestic press, has talked about what's in it for this guy. But and my point was, if he were a Republican spending, he's against Bush. If it's a Republican spending $25 million against Kerry, he would be portrayed as making Lord Voldemort seem like Shirley Temple. I mean,
right. Influencing elections, almost buying elections.
Exactly. So that's the kind of of slant, and in the column this morning, I said, you know, after this is over, I think the press corps needs to step back and say, okay, how did we cover this? What did we cover? What did we not cover? It's like
what would prompt them to do that, though, Rich?
Well, you know, because these are smart people, and they you know, for the most part, they want to do a good job. The problem is that they are allowing their biases to now not just seep into their copy, but to take over their copy. And I think they need to just sort of yank. We all get into these kind of rhythms, and you just need to have somebody kind of jerk the chain a little bit. So, okay, I'm back on track.
Rich, what do you think? How much do you think the debates have impacted the election? We've got one more, the campaign, I should say. We've got one more to come this week, right?
I think both sides. Yeah, one more to go Wednesday night. The I think both sides got what they wanted out of the first two. Kerry established himself as a legitimate candidate for president, which a lot of people did not think he was. In the second one, the president established himself as being able to, you know, articulate the policies that he had trouble with in the first one. The third one is, you know, I mean, it's foreign policy debate. Typically, talk about getting down in the weeds. This is when they start throwing around numbers and percentages, and you know, 10 minutes after it starts, people will start zoning out. So I think the debates pretty much have done what they want to do, and now it's back to, you know, toe-to-toe slugging it out for the last 3 weeks. And I suspect, and again, given my biases, this is probably not a surprise to anybody, but I suspect that the president will win re-election. I suspect he'll win within the area of 300 electoral votes. Remember, you need 270 to be re-elected.
Mm-hmm. What are the states that both candidates still are in play for? You know, obviously there are red states, there are blue states.
Yeah.
There are states that are some red states are now blue states and vice versa. But there are some states that are toss ups
and
spend their time.
Yeah, a lot of them are very close. Ohio is probably the big prize right now. I think Florida, largely because of the way the president and his brother, the governor, responded to the hurricane siege, is now tilted fairly, I mean, plus five or so for the president. So that's getting out of range for Kerry. Pennsylvania is probably plus three or four for Kerry, so unless something happens there, he'll probably win that. So now it's really down to Ohio, Michigan to some degree, but probably not, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Oregon, you know, those kinds of places, New Mexico. But Ohio is the big prize that I think is probably...
Well, but hasn't it been said that no one's ever won without Ohio?
No Republican has ever won without Ohio.
But it is, okay.
Yeah. But going back to the debates, prior to the debates, Bush was sitting on about somewhere between a 6 and a 9 point lead there, and then that lead evaporated after that first debate. And we'll see if it comes back later this week. If it does, then the election will probably pretty much be over.
Right. Rich, thank you for being here. Good job today, as always, and we appreciate your time. Mullings.com, right?
Yes, sir, Mullings.com.
That's where you can subscribe to his thrice weekly cyber column. See you, Rich, next time.
Thank you, my friend.
Rich Galen, ladies and gentlemen, a great American. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you. I'll be right back.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.